I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 25th, 2004. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. And my sponsor is a sponsor who has a sponsor. So, with all that said, I'm really nervous. I haven't spoke to this group in a long time. So, let's start at the beginning. I was born and raised in Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. I come from a family of four. I have an older brother who is, I guess the big book would classify him as a heavy drinker. Oh, before I go on, I'd like to say I normally wear a collared shirt to my own group, and the only night I forgot to wear one, I was asked to speak, so I do apologize for that. But next week I'll have one on. So anyhow, back to my family. So my parents hardly ever drank. You know, my dad, I think I've seen him take a drink a handful of times, never seen him drunk. And my mother gets drunk and goes to bed like two or three times a year. So, you know, I saw a lot of heavy drinking when I was a kid. My mom's side of the family, when they get together, they like to drink and have a good time and get crazy. But it's usually like once a year, you know, it's just on vacation. But I remember when I was a kid thinking, like, if I could do that, you know, it looked like a lot of fun, you know. And I had a lot of trouble when I was a kid, like, assimilating, like, making friends or really fitting in with any groups or anything like that. I did a lot of, I tried a lot of activities. I was actually a Boy Scout. I was an Eagle Scout, actually. And I was very active in my church when I was a kid. And, you know, I was like a good kid, you know. I got good grades in school and did everything I thought I was supposed to do, but I was pretty miserable, you know, thinking about killing myself on a regular basis. And, you know, I never really smiled a lot or joked around. You know, I was a really very, very, very serious child. Like, I remember being in, like, fifth grade trying to figure out what college I was going to go to and how my grades, the grades I was getting in fifth grade were going to affect how I went to, what college I went to. Which I now know is absolutely ridiculous. But at the time, that's the kind of kid I was. And so by the time I got a drink, I think Bill W. talks about this, about, you know, like I needed a drink, you know, like desperately, just to cut the edge. And I was at a party, and I was there with one of my good friends who, within, like, probably 5 years later, would be dead as a result of alcoholism. And I was at a party with this kid. He, you know, we both kind of liked the, we're going for the same girl. And so to break the edge, he poured a drink, you know, and he's like, here, try this. And I tried it. And I loved it. You know, I loved it instantly. I'm not going to say it changed my life right away or that I became a daily drinker right away. You know, I was only like 14. But I know after that point, every time I had the opportunity to drink, I did. And I got drunk almost every single time I drank after that. When I was 19, I got in a pretty serious car accident. I was with some friends. We were partying. Got in the car with a kid who didn't even know how to drive, and he was drunk. And so that combination, you know, the car ended up into a tree, and I was pretty seriously injured. Really, it was more like a bloody injury than like a serious injury. I hit my head, and it got busted open, and blood was everywhere. And, I was wearing a white shirt, and my shirt's so bloody, they ripped my shirt open to make sure I didn't have any chest injuries. And, but anyways, this car is in this guy's front yard, and, they're pulling me out of the wreck, and the guy who owns the house is coming out with a phone in his hand, and he's like, you better call your folks and get this situated. So I called my dad, and I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'm in a little bit of trouble. You know, I don't really know what's going on, but you need to come over here. And I gave him the address. And then as soon as I hang the phone up, I look at my friend. His eyes are like this big. And I'm like, what? What's going on? And he goes like this. And I touch my head, and my hands are covered in blood, and I start freaking out. And got taken to the hospital. I got a bunch of stitches. But the thing I remember distinctly about that incident is that I promised my parents I'd never drink again. You know, and I promised I'd never drink and drive, you know, and I believe, you know, looking back now, I honestly was telling the truth. Like, I had no intention of drinking, you know, but I didn't know what else to do. So what happened to me is I went off to college when I was, at the end of that summer, I went off to college, and high school was a pretty miserable experience for me, and I told myself I wasn't going to keep living that way. Like, college was going to be different, and that meant there was going to be a lot of alcohol. And so I took that promise I made, I threw it out the window, and I started drinking almost within a week. I was telling my mother about college today, and there I got to college, and I just went crazy, you know. And I was there a week, and I lost my virginity, and I've been drunk, like, within a week. And to me, it was like the greatest place on earth. And I had a steady girlfriend from the moment I got to college to the moment I graduated from college, you know. And I was drunk the whole time I was there. I was in a fraternity, you know. It just so happens I picked the only fraternity on campus that was a non-drinking fraternity. Like, their whole deal was to do good things for people, and all I wanted to do was drink, you know. And I became the president of that fraternity. And they'd be like, is he drunk again? We'd be at like a fraternity event, and they'd be like, is Mike drunk? I think he's drunk. And I'd be like, whatever, you know, I'm just trying to have a good time. That was my whole thing. It's like, I'm just trying to have a good time, you know, and you people are killing my buzz. Yeah. Chill out. And so I'd like take the pledges, and I'd invite one of my over to our place, and we'd get drunk with the pledges. And they'd be like, you really are not supposed to be doing that. Whatever, you know, I'm just trying to have fun. I hooked up with people at college who did what I like to do, you know, and I partied with them. We partied pretty hard for a couple of years. And then after 2 years, like, it got to the point where no one knew what I was going to do when I drank. I was a blackout drinker on top of everything else. I drank really hard, really fast, and got in a blackout really quick. And then when that happened, there was no telling what was going to happen. You know, there was no stopping me. And so they pretty much shut me out of their lives. And they were like, we don't want you around. Like, you can come around when you're sober, but when you're drinking, go somewhere else. Don't come around here. And so I ended up meeting a girl at that point in my life who partied like I did, and she drank like I did. And, you know, and so as a result, I asked her to marry me. And the next day, we had these parties for us, like engagement parties like people have. And I got drunk and got thrown out of one of them. And then I got drunk and got thrown out. Well, I didn't get thrown out of the second one. We left. And then I told her, my sponsor has shown curse in the podium, but I told her to F off, and I flipped her off, and I walked away. And this was the moment, like the day I asked her to marry me. I wanted to spend the rest of my life with this woman 12 hours before, and at that point, I didn't want anything to do with her, you know? And the next day, I swore off drinking. I stayed sober for like 3 months, maybe, and I was just drinking again. Because with no spiritual solution, and without the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's no way I can stay sober. There's no chance. You know, I've tried everything. And so we patched everything up and ended up moving out here to Florida. We're still engaged, and we're living in St. Pete down by the beach. And, it was an ideal situation. For her, not so much. But because she came here to go to law school, like to have a life, you know, to be an adult. And I came out here to party, you know, and have a good time. And that's what I did. You know, I drank them. I pretty much turned to a daily drinker at that point. And I did a lot of drinking and driving. I used to there was a stretch of road on 275. Like, I'd get on 275 and get off at the next exit. So I used to like to see how fast I could drive drunk between exits before I had to stop at the stoplight at the end of the exit ramp. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But, you know, all fun comes to an end, and I ended up getting a DUI. You know, and at that point, like, we had talked about my alcoholism a lot, like, as a major problem in our relationship. And every time we talk about it, I would turn around on her and what was wrong with her, you know, like classic alcoholic fashion. I just took it off me and put it on her. You know, she had her own problems, and so it was easy to do. And but at this point, like, I'm sitting in jail, and there's no way to deny the fact that my drinking's out of control when you have to get bailed out of jail. And so, you know, I ended up trying to get sober. And I, but at this point, I tried Alcoholics Anonymous a handful of times, and my then fiance and I decided it wasn't for me. And so we tried to go to church, you know. And you know, church is a great thing, and it works well for a lot of people. My parents love it. Like, they go every week, and they talk on and on and on about it. And in fact, my wife and I now are trying to find a church to raise our kid in. But you know, at that point in my life, talking to some minister about alcoholism wasn't going to cut it, you know. And at the end of that month, like, I just had enough, you know. And I was homicidal, and I was suicidal, and I was really going crazy. I just had untreated alcoholism is all it was, just pure untreated alcoholism. And so I ended up going to an AA meeting, and I met this young guy at the meeting, and he told me about a young people's group. I hooked up with this young people's group down in St. Pete, and you know, they did things kind of like what we do here. You know, they go to a meeting every day, they do service work, they reach their hand out to the new guy, and you know, we were rocking and rolling, like we were having a great time. We were building a group, you know. Like, when I started going in a group, it was like our group used to be at the old church. It was smaller, and we, you know, we were working to make it bigger, and it was like you feel like you're part of something. And it was really awesome, you know. And I really enjoyed the time I spent with them. But what ended up happening is I got a lot of cool things at that point. You know, I got a good job, and I got married, and you know, we moved into our first little place, and it was like, oh, the happy little story. You know, everything that you want, or I wanted in life, was starting to come true. And I forgot that I got that because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I got that because I was just a hardworking guy, you know, and I got what I deserved, you know. And because of that, I got what I deserved, all right. I got drunk. You know, I stopped going to meetings. I stopped talking to my sponsor. And I got, like, halfway through the steps. And so I got drunk, you know. And I got drunk, I got sober, and I got drunk again in a very short period of time. And after I got drunk the second time, my wife left me, and I moved up to Tampa. I had gotten a job at USF, and it was a good job. It was like a career job that I could have turned into a career very easily. And I drank it away. All the things that happened to us because of drinking, you know, was starting to happen. I had amassed a huge amount of friends, like a big group of people that I could drink with. And the same thing happened in college. They didn't want me around anymore. And they're like, okay, you know, time for you to go. And but I was kind of crafty. I had different groups, and I kept them separated. So, like, when this group over here got tired of me, I went to group two. And group two got tired of me, I went to group three. And by that point, group one had forgotten the crazy thing I had done. So I went back over to group one. But eventually, they all just kind of, you know, fizzled out. And I had one friend left. And I actually had grown up with him back in Virginia, and I ran into him here in Florida, and we did a lot of drinking together. And he would only hang out with me when his wife got mad at him. Like, he couldn't hang out at home, so he came over to my place, and we drank together. But what ended up happening, you know, for me, is my life was just miserable, you know. There was no big event, you know. It wasn't anything huge that happened. I just was miserable. I was unhappy, and I wanted to die. And I was tired of feeling that way. And so, you know, the last night I was drinking, I went out to Bennigan's, the old Bennigan's up on Fowler, and I went there, and I got drunk. You know, I wasn't intending to. I wanted to be. I had every intention of being sober, and I drank anyways. And I came home in a blackout. Came to, and my, like, this easy boy I used to have, and you know, and the room was dark, and I opened my eyes, and I thought I'd gone blind. And I remember thinking to myself, like, just as calm as I'm telling you right now, like, you're blind, and that's just the way it's going to be. Yeah. And you know, and I can tell you right now, if I was struck blind right now while talking to you, I'd freak out, you know. And I'd tell you to call 911 or something. But at that point in my life, I was just like, whatever. That's just the way it is, you know. Those are the breaks. And I wasn't blind, obviously. I had just taken my glasses and thrown them across the room. And so I crawled around in this apartment that was covered in, the floor was covered in puke and God knows what else. And I found them, and I passed out in bed. I woke up the next day, and remember, I said out loud, I was like, God, you gotta, you know, either take my life or change my life, but something's gotta change. I can't keep living like this. And that same voice that always was in my head telling me what to do. I said, just go back to Alcoholics Anonymous and everything's going to be okay. You know, it was just like that. And that day I walked into the new Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I did some outside things, I guess outside substances, as people call it. And so I was, that was the first, my sobriety is the 25th. I did a fourth step, and I realized I had relapsed and not told anybody. So I had to change my sobriety date. You know, and, but after the 25th, you know, I've been sober ever since then, you know. And it's been a pretty amazing ride, you know. A lot of cool things have happened to me as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I first came in, you know, I was pissed off at the world, you know. I didn't want to be here, but I had nowhere else to go. You know, and I didn't know what else to do. Honestly, I thought I was crazy. I really thought I was going crazy. I thought I could hang out here long enough, maybe meet a girl, maybe get a good job. So basically just take. I was going to come here and take as much as I could, and then I was going to leave. And then go back out and figure something else out. You know, and keep running the hustle until I died, you know. And I went to my first meeting back was at the Sobriety Club, which... it was a pretty interesting place. I still have you check it out. This is pretty neat. That's all I'll say about that. But that was like on a Monday. So between Monday and Thursday, I went to Sobriety a handful of times. And then Thursday, Thursday I came here, you know. And I'll be 100% honest. I spent a lot of time trashing this group when I was sober in St. Pete. You know, we kind of had a beef with some people here, and we spent a lot of time talking a lot of crap about people in this group, you know, a lot of stuff that, well, you're still here today, and I don't want to be here, and I let everyone know it, you know, but they never said go away, they never said take your bad attitude and go somewhere else, they said this is what we're doing, if you want to show up, you know, and that's what I did, you know, and I learned to put old ideas aside. And, you know, and these guys were doing the steps, and these guys were doing service work, and these guys were excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a very, very small group of people back then. And, you know, and so I got involved. I started doing as much as I thought I needed to do, I'll say that. And I stayed sober for about 9 months, I think. 6 months, 9 months, something like that. And I was at Riverside. Who's here tonight, actually? I was at Riverside doing a speaking commitment with another member of this group. Because that's what the guys used to do on whatever night that, I think it's Wednesday night. That's what they used to do on Wednesday nights. All the guys in this group would go to Riverside, every one of them. And they would just pick a speaker out of the group of guys. Who didn't speak last time? Okay, now you're speaking this time. You know, I went there with 30 days and told my story. It's the first time I ever told my story. And to go back. My wife divorced me when I first got sober. Within the first 6 months, I got divorced, got fired from two jobs. The day I signed my divorce papers, I called up my mother, and she said, well, how are you doing? And I said, I don't know. I think I might go get a drink. And I hung up the phone, and I called someone else from this group, and I can't remember who it was, but they told me they were going to go to Riverside that night. And I went to Riverside that night, and feeling like crap. And Fred was chairing Riverside back then, and I remember telling him, don't ask me to speak, I don't have it tonight, I'm not going to do it. And we sat down in the meeting, and he said, your speaker's name's Mike, and he pointed right at me. And I told my story, and I stayed sober that night, you know, just doing service work. And so anyways, I'm like 6 or 9 months sober, and we're sitting there at Riverside, and I don't know what happened, but the kids must have got in trouble or something, because they didn't come out, and I'm sitting there with this buddy of mine. He was just talking and sitting there and talking and talking, and finally the subject turns around to me and he's like, you know, he's like, what's your deal? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, kind of a weird question. He's like, well, what's your deal? You know, you don't do anything. No one hardly ever sees you. You're not a member really of the group. You don't hang out. You don't do any service work really. He's like, no one knows who you are. You're going to drink. And he asked me point blank. He's like, if you drink, do you think you're going to die? At that point, yeah, I did. You know, I'm probably not going to physically die from drinking alcohol, but I'd probably end up blowing my head off or getting a car wreck or something, you know. So at that point, yeah, I did think I was going to die. He said, well, if you think you're going to die, then stop effing around with this thing. You know, start doing AA the way it's supposed to be done, and you might stick around, you know. At that point, I was 25 years old. That kid was like 15, you know. That's a humbling thing to hear. You know, and that same kid used to, we used to have a cigarette, the butt man position out in front of the home group, which for those of you who are unfamiliar, that means you have to go around and pick up cigarette butts if you smoke them or not. You know, and you have to throw them away. Well, this kid was 15. He had a girlfriend, and I was 25. I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't have a wife. I didn't have anything. And he would go running and talk to his girlfriend after the meeting. I have to go tell him we have to pick up cigarette butts. So to get back at me, he'd spend all the time slamming me about how I wasn't working a good program and how, you know. And I'd complain about the fact that my wife was leaving me, and he'd be like, yeah, you know what happened? You're an alcoholic, and you drank your life away. And all you know how to do is drink. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I go to USF. I'm in a graduate program at USF. That's not just undergraduate. That's graduate. That's a big deal, you know. And I know a lot of things, and I don't know who the hell you think you are, but I'm a smart guy, you know. So, of course, I didn't say any of this. I was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm a loser. You're right. Yeah. All I know how to do is drink. Yeah. You know, and I got a sponsor when I first got here, and we worked the steps. I did them as best I could. After I talked with that kid, I knew something was going to have to change, because I was doing AA the way I'd done it before, and that hadn't got me anything. You know, that hadn't got me sober. I didn't stay sober doing it that way. So I had to do something different. In fact, when I came back, everyone would ask me that. I don't know if I had so much anymore, but they'd be like, what are you going to do different this time? Because what you did last time didn't work, buddy, so what are you going to do this time? You know, what you're doing before ain't going to cut it, so you got to do something different. And I didn't know. That's what I'd tell them. Like, I don't know. And they'd look at me like, oh, you're in trouble. You better figure it out. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, and so what I was going to do different is I was going to start working someone else's program. I was not working mine, because mine wasn't going to work. You know, and I got a different sponsor. And this guy, his deal was, he said, well, are you willing to follow direction? Like, yeah, I guess. You know, whatever that means. You know, yeah, sure. And he says, well, if you want what I have, you'll do what I do. You know? At that point, he had just brought up his girlfriend. So he was crazy as hell. And I was trying to get my ex-wife back, so I was crazy as hell. So we were a good combination. And both what we needed was Alcoholics Anonymous. We needed to do AA, you know? And, you know, that was around the time that his sponsor told him to bid for Circuit Call. So we did. And we didn't get it, but we went back the next year, and we got it the next year, and I was chair of the host committee. You know, I don't say it to brag, because my ass was on fire the entire time. I was really close to drinking a lot of times, you know. I got a relationship with a newcomer. I don't recommend doing that. That was a bad, bad idea, you know. I've never said it from the podium, but yeah, I did that. You know, I'm not necessarily proud of it, and I don't say it to brag, because I see it happen a lot. But you know, that's my story. That's what I did. You know, I can't change that. But yeah, so I'm dating a newcomer. I'm chairing Circuit Paw. Half the group doesn't like me because I got to make decisions and I got to say things that nobody wants to say in these meetings, these business meetings. You know, and, but that during that time, I got closer with my sponsor. You know, I had to go to him about everything to do with that conference. Cause I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I'm not sure he did either, but I think between the two of us, we could figure it out. You know, and we held that conference, and it was cool. You know, because during that time, something magical happened in our group. You know, we finally had something to tell the guys. You know, that was we could tell guys what was going on, because we didn't just have the home group anymore. Now we were trying to do this conference too. So we'd be like, hey, come along, you can do what we do. We're doing this conference. Get a service position for this conference. And we got an activity going on Friday night. Why don't you show up there and you can be of service there too? You know, and people started sticking around, and this thing started to grow. And it was really pretty cool, you know. And God, I'm going to be like this other guy. I always laugh at Dave when he cries on the podium. Look, he's back there smiling at me now. So, you know, the group started to grow, and I was laughing to myself when Bill asked me to speak. The last time Bill was speaker chair, he decided it was a good idea to consolidate some of our service positions. I don't know if you remember this, Bill. And I was set up at the time. We had a set up and a closer position, right? And so Bill decided it would be a good idea to consolidate all of our service, some of our service positions. So I had to take over, set up, and clean up. At that time, not a lot of people got here at 6. In fact, I was pretty much the only one. So I was dragging tables, I was putting out chairs, doing it myself. At that same time, our literature guy got drunk. He showed up at Ryan's house one day with a tote, and he's like, "Here, like, what are you doing?" "I'm gonna go. I gotta go. And he just took off. And then here they are, like, "Well, who gets there early?" "Well, Mike gets there early. Here's the literature." So now I'm the literature guy. I'm set up. I'm clean up. You know, I'm making coffee. And at that, we also consolidate set up, clean up, and the coffee. So I'm doing coffee. I'm setting up the meeting. I'm cleaning up the meeting, and I'm doing literature. You know, and it was that kind of stuff that saved my ass. You know, was having to get here at 6 o'clock every Thursday, and no matter what was going on, I got somewhere to be, you know. I got something going on. And you know, we started meetings, you know, and I had this weird work hours. I started this 10 o'clock meeting. I did that for a year. You know, I chaired a 10 o'clock meeting at the Red Door, and I started that, and that was cool. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was something for our group to do. And then, you know, it's through service work, you know, that I stayed sober. That's my story. You know, I've done the steps. I did the steps. And I've seen that work in my life. For me, it's always been suit up and show up. You know, and the newcomer girl and I got engaged, and then we got married. And she's not a newcomer anymore. She's just celebrated 4 years, I think. 4 years, yeah. And I hope she won't hear this tape. And we got married, and when we got married, our whole home group was there, which was awesome, you know. And the guys who were there when I got sober were in my wedding, which was pretty cool, you know. And then we wasted no time in getting her pregnant. And then we're at home watching a movie, and she's like, "I gotta go to the bathroom." She gets up and goes to the bathroom. She comes out of the bathroom. She's got one of those sticks in her hand. And she's like, "Hey, what does this mean?" She hands it to me. I'm like, I look at it, and I look at the box and the directions. I'm like, "I'm pretty sure it means you're pregnant." And she's like, "That's what I thought." And I said, "Well, do you have any more of these sticks?" And she didn't, so I went out to the store and I bought some. I was like, "Here, there's two in there. Let's do this a couple more times." You know, and it turned out, yeah, she was pregnant. I went to the doctor the next day and confirmed it. I wasn't going to get railroaded in anything. And, and we just had a baby boy not too long ago. You know, but the cool thing is, not only did my home group show up to my wedding, we had my bachelor party, we had a house meeting. And at the hotel for the wedding, we had a meeting every night. And the night I got married, left my bride in the room, and I went to an AA meeting. And everyone who was at the wedding, who was sober, was in that meeting, you know? And my great-grand sponsor chaired the meeting. Because he flew in from D.C. to see me get married. Because when I wanted to get married, I asked my sponsor, and he said, "I don't know anything about that. I've never been married." And then he told me to ask his sponsor. His sponsor, I would never ask him for relationship advice. Under any circumstance. And then, so he told me to ask his sponsor. And so that same guy, I asked him if it was cool for me to get married. And he gave me advice, and then he showed up at my wedding, and he was there, you know. And all those people were at a meeting. And then from that meeting at the bachelor party, we started a quarterly men's meeting, you know, and we try and do it every quarter. And all the guys from this group get together and we have a men's meeting at someone's house. You know, last time we even cooked dinner, and it was pretty cool. And even the women have started doing something like that, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that builds a solidarity in your home group, you know. It's not just a meeting, you know, it's not just something we do on Thursday nights just for the hell of it, you know, because there's more to it. It's a group. This is just a meeting, you know. And it's been a pretty cool ride. I was talking to my sponsor, and he said he was going to the World Conference, and I should try everything I could to get there. And through a series of events that I still can't to this day explain, I ended up in Toronto, and we went to the World Conference, and that's probably one of the best things. But you know what's cooler than that is I just made my reservation to go this year. For this time. And this time I'm going to go with my wife and my son. And we booked the We booked a room right across the street from the convention center, so I can just wheel my son on his little car seat stroller thing and just go right across the street, and he can be in an AA meeting, you know. And it's just been an amazing thing to see like how Alcoholics Anonymous touches every single aspect of my life. You know, I have a job today because someone in AA told me I should apply and get that job. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I could show up there, and I could go to work, and I got a promotion. You know, and I have a career now. All because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And when I first started dating my wife, she didn't have a good relationship with her family. So we decided every Monday we're going to go to her house for dinner. And no matter what was going on, we tried as, like, hell to be there. And it wasn't always comfortable. You know, a lot of times it was kind of awkward, you know, because she didn't always get along well with her parents. But you know what happened? Our lease ran up at our apartment, and we're building a house. And when you're building a house, you don't want to sign on the lease, because then you don't want to stay over because you got to pay extra. And we were joking around, like, oh, we'll just move in here with our parents. And her dad was like, yeah, sure, you know. And now we live with our parents, which is challenging. You know, it's an adventure. It definitely is. I mean, we definitely have had some sticky situations, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I don't have to scream and shout anymore. I don't have to get in these knockdown, drag out arguments. I can just tell them, you know, this is how I feel. I can listen to how they feel. We can work things out, you know. And all kinds of cool things. Like, my parents just retired. I can't believe, like, I'm having trouble dealing with that, because it makes me feel like I'm old. Their parents are retired, but they own a house here in Florida, and they came down here. And every week they come over and they come see us because they want to see the baby and they want to be a part of our life. You know, when I was drinking, that wasn't the case. You know, nobody wanted to be a part of my life. I was a mess, a complete mess. And you know, and we just went to go visit them at their house, and they you know, and we never argued once. You know, we don't always have to see eye to eye on everything, but we don't have to shout at each other either. And that's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was definitely I won't say a bad person, but I did some bad things. You know, I did a lot of things I wasn't proud of. But I don't have to do that today. And it's been, like I said, it's been a great ride. You know, and I look forward to what the future holds now. You know, I don't wake up wanting to kill myself anymore. And the last thing I'll say is, I always like to say this, is I owe everything I have to the change in my pocket, to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I came in here with absolutely nothing, and I have a life today that I don't deserve. You know, I deserve to, my sponsor used to tell me, please tell me two things. He used to tell me, as soon as I accept the fact that I may never have a girlfriend ever again, that's when I'll get one, which absolutely was the truth. That's exactly what happened. And also that he used to tell me that I deserve to be dead in the streets somewhere or locked up in prison, you know, and that's absolutely true, because that's what happens to alcoholics, and that's not my life today. Thank you very much.
My name is Brad, and I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio, in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you'll pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like. So my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are two or three things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up all with the Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. One more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much. Thanks.